Hare Krishna. So lovely to see you all again. I've been away, but you may not have noticed. I was in America for nearly a month. So today we have a wonderful occasion, appearance day of Sripad Ramanujacharya. Jai. Madhvacharya? I've just gone and research the whole class. Now what am I going to do? But they're both the same, right? Because one's the Acharya and the other is the Acharya. What's the difference? Is there a difference between them? Are you sharp? Are you feeling sharp this morning? Yes, both Acharyas. And for Madhvacharya, it's not about... Can you turn it down a little bit? I'm not a third world... Third world dictator. For Madhvacharya, it's not about the oneness in the two Acharyas, it's about the difference. Because without the differences, the onenesses have very little meaning. The followers of Madhvacharya, sometimes they criticize ISKCON. Did you know that? Sometimes they criticize ISKCON for this expression, for the one expression that we use, part and parcel. They don't like this. They go, what are you saying? Why do the people of ISKCON keep saying that the soul is part and parcel of God? Do you not know that the soul is completely different from God? How can the soul be one and God, Sri Hari, be one and the same thing? Part and parcel? What are you talking about? This is too close to a oneness. They don't like it when ISKCON speaks like this, you see. Whereas the followers of Ramanujacharya sometimes say, part and parcel, yes, but you should understand what that actually means. So we have a very distinct expression in our Vaishnava Sampradaya. Sampradaya is a cumulative expression of understanding. And so when we look at those, how many names do we have in our official parampara in the 32 or 33, which is it? Eh? Is it 32? Our official parampara printed in all the books, all BBT books. How many? 31, 32, or 33? I don't know. Cue quick rustling of books to find out where it is. I thought so. 32. So 32 names. Why does a person's name appear in the parampara? We've just been singing a song. So nicely sung by Trinadabhi. Where is he to catch my praise? Trinadabhi's gone. Okay, well, it wasn't that good. He's not here for my class. So Trinadabhi very nicely, very enthusiastically sung a song which culminated in the lines, Ramachandra Sangamagi. Narottama Das is the author of this song. But Ramachandra was one of his friends. Where is Ramachandra Das in the parampara? Where is he? Why doesn't he get a mention? If people are on stage introducing the rubettes, okay, ladies and gentlemen, on drums we have, yeah, it's not very important, but on bass we have, the lead guitar, you know, you'd feel very hurt, wouldn't you? All this time, singing, drumming, writing, bow tie swirling, and they haven't mentioned my name. So why do some people get a mention and some people don't? This is the thing. Some people who criticize, they criticize, oh, in ISKCON you have so many people, how can they be in the parampara? And there are so many people who don't appear in the parampara. And yet they were in the parampara. They were very much in it, historically. But we don't mention them. This Vaishnava parampara is meant for learning. The idea is that every sampradaya has a certain number of names that you should be able to recite as a disciple. And if you're good, you should have a verse for each one of them in your Mangala Charana. That's what in Gurukula if you go to Gurukula from age 5, which many of us didn't, I don't think, you would have been taught all these taniyans, these verses glorifying the different acharyas. Why? Because each of them was so important that they get a mention. And the idea is that the knowledge as it is revealed by each one of them. And you can say, improved by each one of them. Increment. You're listening. I know you're listening. Nothing better than the sound of your own name to get you to come into an assembly, isn't it? So, who else should we mention now to get them to come to class? So, why is it then that Madhvacharya gets a mention? Not only a mention, but a glorification each time we say the word of ISKCON. And then we want to officially describe what ISKCON is. We say it as which sampradaya? The Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Yes, so Madhva gets a mention every single time we officially declare the name of our sampradaya. And yet in many cases, the knowledge that we teach is more closely aligned to Ramanujacharya than Madhvacharya. So how is that possible? Well, it's possible if you claim it. If you claim to be in a sampradaya and you trace your line. A sampradaya is nothing more than the claim of the most recent acharya who traces his finger back through history and says, this is how we got here. Plus, of course, you should be able to prove it by showing demonstrably that the philosophy that you follow is contained within the previous acharya's writings. So what was it about the writings of Madhvacharya whereby 800 years later we're claiming to be in his sampradaya, and others who are actually in his sampradaya are saying, no, I'm not too sure about that. So this is a dispute. So what is the dispute? How can we? Can you claim to be a member of a sampradaya if you don't follow the acharyas? Well, it turns out that the actual elements of Madhvacharya's teachings we are following, and in fact we are. ISKCON is currently the best representative of those major teachings. There are details, and then there are the principal teachings. And why that's important is because each acharya really gets to. One of the reasons he gets to be an acharya is because he reveals the teachings in a way which is accessible and relevant for the particular time in which he lives. So this is Madhvacharya. So he stresses certain things. Other times he doesn't. Other acharyas don't stress these certain things. What did Prabhupada stress? What's his contribution to the sampradaya? Immense as it is, it should be listed so that we remember it. What is the distinct contribution in his teaching and his preaching? Ah, yes. Rejecting Mayavad philosophy. Nirvishesha. You say it every time you offer your peanuts. Every time you offer your peanuts to Krishna, you say it. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. You cannot eat. In this movement, you cannot eat without saying Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschajadesha Tarini. You cannot say that. So Nirvishesha. Nirvishesha. Vishesha means form. Nirvishesha means no form. Rejecting the conclusion that the Absolute Truth has no form. Why? Because as soon as you say formless, what does that mean? It means that God is less something. Formless means less. You just indicated it's a snub to God to say that he's formless because he doesn't have a form. There's nothing that God does not have. Nothing that God doesn't have. So don't say form. Oh, I believe that God. Well, who cares what you believe? Who really cares? Who are you to tell me what you believe? I'm not interested in what you believe. What do you know? How have you realized it? How is it expressed in your behavior? This is another contribution of Srila Prabhupada. Straight, clear thinking and straight and clear speaking. This is a contribution of Madhva also. But we'll go on to that in a minute. So what else? Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi. Getting rid of the The extinction philosophy. The extinction philosophy is that now they're out on the streets in London protesting climate change, the extinction rebellion people. Well, Prabhupada was the very first person to protest against extinction. Shunyavad means extinction. It means that all you are is a combination of desires. There is no such thing as personality. When your desires cease, you will cease. You'll become nothing. Okay? This illusion that you're currently going through. So this is a philosophy which really has no underpinning in logic. So Madhvacharya is very quick to destroy that, and Prabhupada also. How is it possible? Where does the illusion come from? All the acharyas say this. What is the locus? What is the standing place of illusion? If individuality itself is an illusion, who is the individual that's becoming illusioned? If there's no individual to become illusioned, because individuality itself is an illusion, then how is that possible? Where's the standing place of illusion? So all our acharyas ask that. So what else was Prabhupada's contribution, please? How about Paschacharde Shatarane? How about that one, folks? That's the legend, isn't it? That's the legend. Vaishnavism came west. Vaishnavism came west. Why is that important, Sutapa? Why is that important that Prabhupada came west? Yeah, fulfill the prophecy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why is it important that Prabhupada's books were put into English language? Why is the English language so important? Lokabandhu. It was the order of Bhaktisiddhanta. That's the most important thing, that it was the order of his guru. But on a sort of historical level, why was it important? At that point in history, in the 1960s, why was it important? Because of empire, and because a lot of people speak English in the world, folks. I don't know what the statistics are. Now we have English children being taught Mandarin Chinese in school because people are sort of, for the business world, people are figuring out, you know, they want to train their children in Chinese in order to do business with China. Isn't it a good job that Prabhupada didn't go to China first? That Prabhupada didn't sail into Shanghai, and that all of Prabhupada's books were in Chinese. Isn't that, aren't we pleased? So the point is that from English, we now have translations all over the world in how many languages? 96? 96 plus. So this is the very first time in history that it's happened. Even if that was the only thing that Prabhupada had contributed to the Sampradaya, that in itself, in 500 years' time, would have Prabhupada glorified as the founding member of the Prabhupada Sampradaya. So we, in order to authenticate our identity, we say Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. In the future, certainly in 500 years' time, people may be saying the Brahma Madhva Prabhupadian Sampradaya. And why not? Because no single person in history did what he did. And yet, unique as Prabhupada's contribution is, he was the carrier of the vessel in which was contained the teachings of the 31 other acharyas that we identify and say are worthy of our daily remembrance. So Madhva's unique contribution, you can say, was this also this Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, which is why it's so important for us. The other thing Prabhupada did, of course, was call into question the conclusive essence of the scientific argument. It's something that sometimes we take up as devotees and sometimes we don't. Sometimes the scientific preaching is very strong in ISKCON, sometimes it's very weak. There's a now redoubled effort to bring it up again. But in many, many conversations, what was Prabhupada talking about? You read back through his conversations. He was talking about impersonalism and voidism. He was talking about the scientists. If there's anything we know about Prabhupada, the scientists I kick on face with boot. He is rascal. He is fool number one. Okay. Prabhupada reserved a lot of boot kicking on face for the rascal scientists. We don't do that, do we? Do we, Meena? In our communications department of today, ISKCON of today, would rather place a flower garland around a scientist, or the Dalai Lama, or the representative of different religious traditions. We're very keen to be friendly to all, hateful of none. Isn't that a nice thing to be? Well, Madhvacharya says, not too sure about that. Madhvacharya's followers were very strong preachers. And as we're talking about Madhvacharya, we should say that preaching is a combo of a voice like a hammer and a delivery like a rose. And Prabhupada had that, the combination of thunderbolt and rose. Now, sometimes ISKCON goes through a kind of thunderbolt phase, maybe in the 1970s. We were all thunderbolts. Everybody was a nonsense, fool, rascal, demon, meat-eating, carmi, fornicator. And no one was ever good enough, neither would they be good enough. And any other member of any religion, what to speak of the head of that religion, was a cheating materialist. We don't do that. Why don't we do it? Why don't we do it anymore? It's a rhetorical question. I'm not suggesting that we do, but why don't we do it? Because we discovered that if you continue to speak like that, what happens? No one likes you. Nobody loves you. And so that could be a problem when no one loves you. And we desperately want to be loved, don't we? Don't we come to this movement to be loved individually? And don't we want this movement to be loved collectively? Yes, we do, don't we? So we hand out roses. And what happened to the preaching that Prabhupada demonstrated? Thunderbolt preaching. We've got a few thunderbolts. Bhaktivikas Swami is famous as a thunderbolt. Jayadvaita Swami is a thunderbolt. Any other thunderbolts that we have? Shivaram Swami is definitely a thunderbolt. Definitely a thunderbolt. I think I've been on the receiving end of a few bolts. But people tell me that he does a lot of roses these days. Anybody else? So, Tamal Krishna Goswami, very much, pretty much all thunderbolt, wasn't it? And then in his later life, a lot more roses. So this combination of thunderbolts and roses is what makes a good preacher. But the essence of being a good preacher is to know when to speak, to whom to speak, and whether what comes out of your mouth is a thunderbolt or a rose. There are times for thunderbolts. Even the Bible says we should be prepared to speak truth to power. So is ISKCON speaking truth to power? Sometimes that's required. We got into this discussion last night on my late, late show. It was a late show. The previous night I was in New York, and then I had 2 hours sleep, and then last night we got into very interesting discussion about, Madhvacharya, because it was Monday night. I do the online discussion. So devotees were asking, these are mainly congregational devotees, are mainly asking, is it appropriate for a devotee to become involved in political protest? That's when you really feel strongly about something. And just doing Harinam, note the just doing Harinam is either seen as not getting to the heart of the matter or protesting enough. Well, there have been times, even for ISKCON, I was explaining, when Harinam was not enough. Harinam is always enough, but there were times when we had to call upon lawyers, we had to call upon politicians, we had to call upon newspaper editors, we had to call upon Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela, why should our movement go to Nelson Mandela to get a good quote? But we did, and it really, really worked. Just to save, basically, the cushions upon which you now sit, that this place was involved in a 15-year campaign to keep it open. Who was part of that campaign in those days? We all contributed something, didn't we? It was a 15-year struggle. And during that struggle, we called upon a lot of thunderbolt speakers. a lot of Thunderbolt speakers, and we had to do a lot of rose giving as well. We called upon different persons. So Vaishnav history, if you look at it, has always been involved with political champions or kings mainly, if you look at India. There is never a Vaishnav movement that has been successful without musicians and poets and kings. You look at the successful Vaishnav history. Purity must be there. Purity is the force. But there's always been very powerful, influential people who build temples so that the common people who don't get philosophy come along and be part of things. Prabhupada called upon different agencies, didn't he? He was unique in his relationship with Srila Vyasadeva, yet when Prabhupada walked into the Kingsport Press in, where was it? They were printing the Bhagavad Gita, either Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam perhaps, and he saw the 80-foot-long, full-color printing press printing out the words of Srila Vyasadeva. Prabhupada paid full dandavats to a printing machine. Huh? Full dandavats to a printing. Why? Tell me why, please. Tell me why. Brihat Mridanga, yes. And Brihat Mridanga is none different from Lord Balaram. And certainly is none different from Srila Vyasadeva himself. So in that printing machine, Prabhupada saw Srila Vyasadeva, the power of Srila Vyasadeva. And he looked and he saw ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. This is Bhagavatam being printed out. Now, let me go to talking about Madhvacharya, because unless we do, we'll get lost. Can you tell I'm a little bit excited? So he was born in 1238. We're still on his birthday talking about him. If you ever get a chance, please do take the train from Bombay. Take the train from Bombay in the afternoon and get woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning on the train as you get to Udupi. And please go to this place of Madhvacharya. You just go through Goa, and as you get through Goa, don't bother stopping for Goa. There's nothing there but beaches and bikinis, so you won't be interested in Goa. But if you go through Goa and you get to the end, just over the border is Udupi, and Udupi is a wonderful place where Madhvacharya made his base. About, 12 miles away from Udupi is Pujaka. And go to Pujaka. It's very nice. It's got a very nice traditional gurukula there, because that is where Madhvacharya was born and where he grew up. It's a very peaceful place. And the children there will come, and if you go there, any visitor, they'll come and recite the Vedas to you. They'll surround you and start singing the Vedas. It's very interesting, actually. The Gurukula children, don't tell this to anybody, folks. I'm so glad this is not going and being broadcast. But the Gurukula children are taught mantras when they go to pass stool in the morning. And the mantras are condemning the Shariraka Bhashya of Adi Shankaracharya. As they pass stool, they're chanting mantras against Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. That is how they're trained. So as they grow up, they have this understanding that this philosophy is something fit to pass stool on. It's all very colorful. I'm sorry to be so graphic this time in the morning, but it's very colorful. Many philosophers who followed Madhva, people like Gyanasindhu, Akshobhya, Vyasatirtha, Raghavendra, who else? I forget. Different philosophers who followed him. In fact, when we look at the Parampara, what we see in the names following Madhvacharya are not actually what we would call guru-disciple chains. They're more like pontiff chains. They're more like the chains of a pope. They're all contemporaries. There's a bunch of six names that all lived at the same time. They were just the first six pontiffs of the mutt, where the changes took place. So, it said the Vyadiraj Tirtha, when he spoke, it was as if a hammer was coming out of his mouth. I mean, he was very, very, speaker so strong that people were afraid to come into his company. That's preaching. But that's the type of preaching you do when you have to in a particular social and philosophical environment. When it's called upon, you do it. So he had to do that. They had to do it because Shankaracharya was very strong. So his name was Vasudev when he was born, but also changed later on to Purna Pragya and eventually Ananda Tirtha, and then, of course, eventually the Acharya Madhva. His contribution, I won't tell you all about his childhood pastimes, that's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but 37 works in Sanskrit, 13 of which are commentaries or bhashyas on Upanishads, and then other commentary, a big commentary on Vedanta Sutra, called the, and then a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's interesting, actually, that in the south of India, it's mainly Vishnu Purana, not Bhagavat Purana. Bhagavat Purana is very specific because it's Krishna, whereas Vishnu Purana, the subject is Vishnu. So people who are more in the line of Vishnu, they tend to draw their information from the Vishnu Purana. It's fine. It's one of the upper sattvic Vaishnava Puranas. But our specific contribution is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Our contribution, our focus. But Madhvacharya wrote a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam called the Bhagavat Tatparya Niranaya. But interestingly enough, he seems to have difficulties with the one chapter which for us kind of separates our sampradaya somewhat from the Madhva stream. And that is chapter 13 of the 10th canto. This is very difficult because chapter 13 of the 10th canto is Lord Brahma stealing the cows and calves, which is a big, it's a biggie for us. It's a big leela. Because the conclusion of that leela, Krishna shows himself to be the origins of the origin of the Narayan forms. Hooray! Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Bhagavatam is specifically for that purpose, to show that. However, Madhva says this section is, we're not too sure about the historical position of this, and perhaps we should remove it. Did you know that? Yeah. So this is a little difficult for him, because, of course, Lord Brahma is the head of the Sampradaya. How could you have the head of the Sampradaya in illusion? Okay. Now, surely, if you're the head of the Sampradaya, when Krishna comes, you would know who Krishna is, because you're the head of the Sampradaya. So how is that possible? But in our understanding is that even when Krishna comes, even when a demon is face to face with Krishna, he doesn't know it's Krishna, because he's a demon. And Hiranyakashipu, when he's face to face with Krishna, he says, "Who's this?" And Hiranyaksha is face to face with Krishna, he says, "Who's this, an amphibious beast? Who is it? I don't understand. What am I seeing here?" No. But when Lord Brahma is in contact with Krishna, because he's in love with Krishna, then Krishna's yoga maya acts and he becomes forgetful, because Krishna wants him to be forgetful in order to demonstrate this. So, last time I was here when I gave class, I forgot to bring this book. But it is it's the last book that Prabhupada, well, it's the last section that Prabhupada translated, the 13th kind of. And we printed 120,000 copies, and this is it. I just thought I'd bring it in. So at the time, this was the final section of the 10th canto. Hence, this is called 10th canto, part 3. It's, of course, it's not the 10th canto, part 3. It's just the 13th chapter. But according to the counting at that time. So I wanted you to have a look at that. Have a look. This was published in this country when, wait for it, we had a BBT division in London, in England. Okay, we didn't have to go running to Sweden for English books to distribute in England. We had our own BBT. Are you understanding what I'm saying? Are you understanding? Okay, have a look at that. It's a fine piece of literature. So, are we okay so far? I'm half asleep, but so not only did he criticize both Shankara and the Buddhists, but there was also Christians. How about that? By the time Shankara was also there, there was also Christians in India. Not many, but he criticized them, and he criticized Ramanuja. And basically, he criticized 21 other schools of philosophy. 21 other schools of philosophy. And the reason is, unless the Acharya criticizes other schools of philosophy, then the followers will be taken away to other schools of philosophy, which is exactly what's happened to many, many, many of our ISKCON devotees. They're taken away to other schools of philosophy because they're insufficiently convinced about this one. Someone else sounds vaguely the same. Someone's giving out a few more roses. Sounds vaguely, we get vaguely the same ideas. And people drift away. We have to be very careful of that. So somebody somewhere, please criticize other schools of philosophy. Sutapa, I point you. So then he translates. He writes what every acharya, to be an acharya, has to write is a bhashya on Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra. So not only does he do that, but sometime later he writes a commentary on his own commentary. And this is called the Anuvyakhyan. And it's said to be his, you know, this is the thing. If you want to really grasp Madhvacharya, you read this Anuvyakhyan. It's very poetical. He toured India. He went to Bengal, Varanasi, Dwarka, Bhadrak Ashram, where it is said he met Srila Vyasadeva. That's why in our Sampradaya, Vyasadeva immediately goes to Madhva. They don't say that, of course, the Madhva people, they don't make that claim. We make that claim. It truncates our Sampradaya, which is kind of convenient for remembering. But they say, whoa. ISKCON, you're saying he got initiated by Vyasadeva? Therefore, no, in between Vyasadeva and Madhvacharya, there was a lot of people. Let me tell you who they were. And ISKCON says, no, we're not interested. There's Madhva, Vyas. That'll do for us. That's fine. We have our way of looking at it. So you know the story. He was on the beach. The ship came too close to the rocks. He took his chadar. He waved the chadar. And the captain was very grateful. He gave him a present. He gave him some rock that was there in the hold as ballast. It was keeping the keel down. And so inside this rock, which was a clay, was a beautiful deity of Balaram and beautiful deity of Krishna. This is the story. The main story is that Krishna was there, and Krishna was then taken to the Udupi, place where they had their monastery, and installed there. And if you go there today on your journey, on your train journey, from 3 o'clock in the morning, the first thing you will do is you'll go down into the town square. It's just a small town. And you'll see the elephants, 3-4 elephants, snoring. Have you ever heard an elephant snore? Very loud. They're all snoring in the town square. That's your first darshan when you go there. You think, snoring elephants. Everybody's taking pictures. I took a group once. So then, next thing is you'll hear, at 4 o'clock, you'll hear a drum beat. They have a drum that's about this long. This wide, rather. Like this big, huge drum. They beat it with a big drumstick. So you'll hear this. And this goes on for about 20 minutes. Great patience on the part of the drummer not to sort of break. Then about 4:30, it's dum dum. But by 5 o'clock, it's dum dum. No, they started, and by 4:15, of course, the saxophone group starts. There's a saxophone group. It's not only a saxophone group. There's 26 saxophones in a room. This is just in Udupi. There's 26 saxophones in a room, and they all start playing. It's like the version of Chennai. Anyway, it's all leading up to Mangalati. And you can hear this through the town. So it's basically, the whole town wakes up by 4:30 to go to Mangalati. Good idea, isn't it? We should 26 saxophones in the Brahmachari Ashram tomorrow, 4 o'clock. Do it. So then everybody wakes up and people go to Mangalati. And it's a traffic jam in town, traffic jam of people walking to the temple. It's a little bit like Vrindavan. For this reason, they call it the Vrindavan of the South. 3 times a week, there's a Rath Yatra. 3 times a week, there's a Rath Yatra. Depending on what sponsors they get, it's either a wooden chariot, a silver chariot, or a golden chariot. There's lamps, there's dancers, there's fireworks, there's an elephant, there's a Nagaswaram band, which is like a grown-up Shanai. Shanai is this, Nagaswaram is this, and Tavil drums. You know the famous Tavil drums that they play. So 3 times a week, and there is feasting for the sponsors. So our group, we sponsored a Rath Yatra. Felt good about it. Doesn't cost too much to sponsor a Rath Yatra. Then you get a big feast afterwards. Excellent cooking. Excellent cooking. And of course, all offered to Krishna. They serve 20,000 pilgrims every day. So basically, you get savory rice, tamarind rice, lemon rice, sweet rice, and yogurt rice. Are you noticing a sort of system going on here? So basically, I forgot coconut rice. So any type of rice you like, but it must be rice. That's what pilgrims get, but it's wonderful. And sometimes we talk about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being the first Sankirtan movement. I'd like to make a small correction here. That Madhvacharya's disciple or follower, Vyasatirtha, who's known also as Vyasatirtharu, he wrote many songs and led a mass movement of Sankirtan in the south, which went from Karnataka, which is a big chunk of South India, but it's above Tamil Nadu, over into Maharashtra. And one of the great saints of that tradition was, of course, Thakuram. And it's, you know, that whole later tradition. Because sometimes, don't we? We say that, Lord Chaitanya was directed by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to go and meet Ramananda Roy. So we don't kind of get the backstory that what movement Ramananda Roy was part of, that he knew all this stuff about Radha and Krishna. And of course, then we say, well, his secret identity was such and such. But in order to know something, in order to speak it, you must have learned it from somewhere. So there was a Krishna movement in the south. So yes, Krishna belongs to us, but everybody loves Krishna, basically. So there was a Sankirtan movement as well. Not as big as it is now, but is very much there. So for Madhvacharya, the main teaching was about the differences. And he taught what is known as Panchama Beda. Not Veda, but Beda. B-H-E-D-A. Beda. Difference. Our philosophy is what? Yeah, Chintya Beda, Beda Tattva. They don't like that. They don't like that. Oh, you're a Chintya Beda, Abeda. Well, what's this Abeda? What is this Abeda? What are you playing around with the Abeda bit for? The non-difference. Why should you stress the non-difference as well as the difference? Difference will do. Just your difference from the Godhead will do. So Madhva talks about 5 differences. He talks about the difference between... First he says that reality is twofold. Of course, every acharya does this. Dependent reality and independent reality. He says Srihari is an independent reality and the soul is a dependent reality. And matter is also a dependent reality, although temporary. But both worlds are real. One is permanent, one is temporary, but both of them are real. He said, as a soul is a distinct reality. Soul is distinct from matter, and the soul is completely distinct from God. We sort of say, no, particle of sunshine and the sun, which is kind of, we slide the scale of oneness up a little bit that way. We say gold and gold mine. gold earring and gold mine, both gold. One in quality, but different in quantity. That's our particular pitch. He said, no. He said, there's a difference, complete and fundamental difference and distinction and complete separation between things in this world. Complete difference between the matter and soul, between matter and God, between souls, and between soul and God. So he was also, in this way, he also had a philosophy that there are different types of souls, because we don't ascribe to that, but there is some understanding that he was really, he felt it really important at that time to preach about the Varnashram system, and that everybody should not be fluid, but they should remain within their Varna and remain within their ashram. We tend not to do that, isn't it? In fact, the mobility of the Varnas and the mobility of the ashrams sometimes comes to bite ISKCON a little bit, or the Gaudiya Sampradaya a little bit. We're the only Vaishnav group that gets sahajas. You don't find sahajas in the Ramanujas, you don't find them in Madhvas, because those feelings are contained to certain expressions within a Varna and ashram system. So sannyasis are very rigid in their practice, much more rigid than ISKCON sannyasis, because we're very... Sannyas is part of the Varnashram system, but we are, you know, we see Varnashram as a tool, not as much as... But there, sannyas is sannyas. So you take sannyas and you know... I think their record up until the 1970s was one fall down of a sannyasi in 800 years, which is a pretty good record, I think. They've topped that record now, but the difficulty is they take sannyas very young. I met a gentleman who is the current acharya, very nice man, very, very nice man. He's 84. He took sannyas when he was 14. And so the sannyas danda is always the same height as your head, and like that. So his sannyas danda, he's only a short man, but his sannyas danda is like this. That's his height when he was 14, so he carries that around. Effulgent man. And that's all I want to say. He started 24 temples in different parts. 24 temples. Ramanujacharya was 74, and each of those 74 had branches. So we have to talk about language when we talk about preaching. The question of preaching in anything but the Tulu or Kannada language, when your sannyas tradition or your preaching tradition is locked tight in a particular language or mode of expression, there are difficulties in that. You know, it's like going to Japan and speaking only in English. It doesn't quite work. Now we have a big BBT division for Africa, and we are putting in place African translations of Prabhupada's works, such as Swahili, Zulu, Ethiopian, and French. French is an African language? Yes. Because what you do, first thing you do is take over the TV station and the radio station. And if you don't take that over, then you take over the universities. If you're trying to conquer a country, first thing you do is knock down the philosophy, take over the broadcasting units, take over the educational units, and supplement your teaching for the teaching that's there. I'm not suggesting that any of you should go and try and take over countries, but that's how to do it. I was in our Nairobi temple, and somebody tried to take over the country. I had a big explosion, series of explosions. Boom! On the hill. We were on a hill, and the TV and radio station was on another hill. This is what you have to deal with in the Brahmacharya Ashram in Nairobi, Kenya. Okay? A coup. A violent coup. A bloody coup to take over the country, happening on the next hill. You know, it's not just whether someone burned the sweet rice. This is like a violent coup. And people with machetes coming to the temple wanting to chop up white people. Excuse me, where can I hide? So there are difficulties. So therefore, Catholics, when they go to India, they now have Catholic sannyasis. And they go there with orange robes, saffron robes, with dandas. And at the top of the danda, have you seen this? Top of the danda is a little crucifix. Oh, yeah. And they have deity worship, just like here, deity worship, just like this. You go into the Catholic Church, and you have pujaris, and ringing bells, and doing arti, dressing the deities, except the deity is Jesus and Mary. Very smart. And now they do Rath Yatra. They bring Jesus out, and everything is the same. The drums, the outfits, the flags, the temples even, the churches even look like temples. Anyway, I'm not suggesting, but the point is, if you have a long plan, there are certain ways. Anyway, come to see me if you want to take over a country. So then, I just wanted to conclude, because we've done enough. We conclude with a short reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 15, verses 31 to 35, because this is, today is the day when Lord Ramachandra finally beat the demon king Ravana. You all know the story. And it's called Vijay Dashami. Dashami is the 10th day, so I guess tomorrow is Ekadashi, usual. Ekadashi follows Dashami. And therefore, Vijay means victory. Victory to Ram, victory to Ram. That song. If you don't know that song, find it. So in this, how did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu behave on this day 500 years ago? What are we reading? And we have it here. Sorry. Vijayadashami Lanka Vijayera Dine Vanara Sainya Kaila Prabhulana Bhakta Gane. I wish Dorkapuri was here, because this is a very good direction. Dorkapuri. On the victory day, celebrating the conquest of Lanka, a day known as Vijayadashami, that's today, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dressed all his devotees like monkey soldiers. So as a special arrangement for today, before breakfast, we're all going to dress as monkey soldiers, and someone's going to be Ram, and someone will be Ravana, and we'll be out on the lawn, okay? Good. Hooray! Displaying the emotions of Hanuman, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took up a large tree branch and, mounting the walls of the Lanka fort, began to dismantle it. Okay, this is all about preaching, folks. In the ecstasy of Hanuman, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu angrily said, "Where is the rascal Ravan? He has kidnapped the universal mother, Sita. Now I shall kill him and all his family." Everyone became very astonished to see the emotional ecstasy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and everyone began to chant, "Jai, Jai, 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 all glories, all glories," again and again. Thank you. There's now a brass plaque right in front of me. Monday to Friday, class finishes at 8:30. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shripad Madhvacharya ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is that it? Questions? I think. One question. Yes, all right.
If the followers of Madhvacharya have a problem with Brahma Vimohanlila, did they have a problem with the pastime when Brahma was attracted to his own daughter as well? Is that an issue? I think it's in the
I think that would have been a slight issue. Ever so slightly. Yes. Yeah. See, the thing is, what gets taught is what is needed to be taught at that particular time. In the 1960s, 1970s, Krishna consciousness was taught not only as a philosophy, but also as a way of communal living. To be in ISKCON meant to live in the ashram. Outside the ashram, there was no ISKCON. There's still a little bit of that lingers on in the way we speak. If we talk about a devotee leaving the ashram, we say he's living outside. Well, outside what? Or outside the ashram? Well, you know, we sometimes open up a description of the congregation by saying, many people now live outside. Well, you bet they do, because where else are they going to live? Okay? We still say that, don't we? It sort of lingers on. And the 1960s hippie slang still lives on. Far out, spaced out, crashed out. Devotees sometimes... So the idea is that as soon as possible, you inculcate certain vocabulary, certain teaching that will fit in with what you need to produce. So Prabhupada needed to produce not only the Srimad Bhagavatam translations, but he needed to produce young men and women who would sell those books for him. And you don't do that if they live outside, because if they live outside, they get married, and when they get married, they've got no time for selling your translations. So you create a youth movement. So the Hare Krishna movement was a youth movement, basically, that very, very gradually had to deal with the fact that people get old. Even though in the books we talk about old age, disease, and death, we didn't actually believe it. Because people would leave us when they got to about 30. I went through 42 years of my life never really associating with anybody over 30. And I looked and I thought, why there's so many young people in this movement? And then you get to realize, actually, they've all gone in different places. And so we have to be not only a youth movement, but we have to look after the dissemination of Krishna consciousness to all ages and all living situations. That is the need of the hour. So we have to produce that. Yes, there's problems here. One more. Yeah. Is it you? Or are you passing the microphone to?
I just had one question, Prabhu. I remember some time ago in a class you quoted how to differentiate or what makes a Sampradaya Acharya special, like there's certain characteristics that makes one an Acharya. Could you repeat that?
What makes one an Acharya? Well, I may have been quoting from somewhere else, but uniqueness of... We talked about unique in learning. We talked about unique teachings that allow people to gain access to the Vedas, that are relevant to the times in which he lives, and creates a mass movement also to support those teachings. See, we really need to create a mass movement. There's a class movement, which is sort of what we do, and then there's a mass movement as well. So the mass movement is Kirtanam Prasadam, and basic understandings of the philosophy. The class movement is creating acharyas. Prabhupada said his movement was for creating 10 million acharyas. You know that quote? 1975, Mayapur. You can look at it, 0001 on the Vanipedia videos. the movement for creating 10 million acharyas. So the whole point is that unless your movement creates acharyas, then what's happening? What are you creating? Anybody can create a following or a congregation or cheap followers. That's easy to do, but you have to create acharyas. So then an acharya really is established retrospectively. You look back at them and think, what did they do? Who's it created by? Well, maybe 4 or 5 generations. Then you look. Only then can you see, oh yeah, we were there, and this person did this and brought us here. It was like I was in a couple of days ago, I was in New York on Broadway. And in the middle of Broadway, just by Trump Towers, it's actually by Central Park. So Central Park is the Central Park. It's defined by the fact that it's central. It's right in the middle. And the monument, which is on the southwest corner, is Columbus Circle. Because in the history of the whole history of America, if you trace it back, well, there wasn't an America before it was discovered. So who discovered it? Well, Christopher Columbus. That's the narration. So he's there and he's lit up with lights and he's sort of, you know, there's fountains and plaques and, you know, it's a big deal. So all roads lead into Columbus Circle. It's got a tube station. And with us, we are the seat of the British Empire, as we had. That was our highest point, folks, the British Empire. Okay. Now we're talking about barriers, trade barriers. There's another empire that we're having to deal with. So the peak of the British Empire was at the time of Nelson. So what's in the middle square of our biggest city? It's Trafalgar Square. So who you venerate has a lot to do with what your history is and how you see your own history. So now everybody wants to be historic, but you can only really do it by looking backwards. That's history. You look and you see, this person was an acharya because of this. There's a contemporary way that the person is, he's achar. He's walking the walk, he's talking the talk, he's writing the write. He's got followers, and his followers have followers. That's the way that you prove that a person's message is of an acharya. Only if the followers have followers, then you've done it for 3 generations, do you know that you're dealing with an acharya. Otherwise, who are you dealing with? You're dealing with a preacher, very nice, thank you very much, but nothing substantial. So the acharya must have followers who then initiate their own followers who are then carrying on the teaching. And then you can say, whew, we did that, that's good enough. And then from the point of history, when you look back and you see 200 years ago, this person discovered penicillin. This person was an acharya in medical research. This person discovered x-rays. You know, we're going to teach this to all the children in all the schools all across the country. This person discovered vaccinations, penicillin, x-rays, because this makes up our modern ability to relieve suffering. So these are the acharyas of science. Stephen Hawking, Einstein, these people made it possible for us to know the mysteries of the universe. So we're going to put their image everywhere and then we're going to teach our children about them. But in India, you actually get taught about the... Well, no, you don't actually. If you go to a traditional school, you do. But India is so avowedly secular that sometimes they really avoid the Hindu acharyas like anything. Therefore, you have to create your own schools. You know. Okay, that's it. I've gone beyond the limits. Thank you very much for listening to my jet lag inspired talk today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.